Thank you. There are three recent events that have drawn my attention for this morning back to the story of Jacob and Esau in the book of Genesis. The first event is the 11th anniversary of my younger brother's death. Our relationship was somewhat the inverse of Jacob and Esau because I was the older brother who robbed the younger. I didn't steal his birthright or his blessing, but I did rob him of some dignity and a healthy sense of self-worth. We grew up like many brothers, best of friends and worst of enemies one moment to the next. In our early childhood, I cruelly taunted and mocked my younger sibling. As a result, our relationship became distant and a little strained. But we grew up. We moved away from each other. I went on to higher education and he went into military service. We kept in touch from a distance and we really did sincerely enjoy each other's company when we were able to get together on occasion. I even forgot about our tense childhood relationship. However, on one occasion, long after we had become adults, he reminded me of one of the demeaning phrases with which I used to mock him. It brought a great deal of sorrow and shame to my heart to realize that my cruel tongue was still haunting my younger brother. The second event which has drawn me to Jacob and Esau is the discussion which has been taking place in the Pentateuch class I'm currently teaching. In relation to the account of Noah and the flood, students were reflecting on how ultimately we must all be related to one another, since everyone on the planet must have descended from Noah after the Great Flood. Of course, that thought was reinforced by the related idea that everyone on Earth must also be descended from Adam. So all people, all nations, even enemies, are related to one another as part of the human race. That conversation is linked to the third event which has drawn me to Jacob and Esau. That third event involves the current conflicts between Israel and her enemies that we hear about every day in the news: Gaza and Lebanon, Yemen, Syria, and ultimately Iran. As we know, these age-old conflicts are reminiscent of ancient Israel's battles in the Old Testament with nations who used to occupy some of the same territories: Philistia and Edom and Moab and Ammon and Aram. I was reminded of the conversation in Pentateuch class because in the cases of Edom and Moab and Ammon, Israel fought against its own relatives. Genesis indicates that Moab and Ammon are distant relatives of Israel through Jacob slash Israel's grandfather Abraham, whose nephew Lot was father to Moab and Ammon. More significant to our story of Jacob and Esau, we're told in Genesis 36, verses 8 and 9, that Esau is Edom, ancestor of the Edomites. Also recall that Jacob, of course, is Israel, as God had changed his name. Edom has the distinction among Israel's enemies of having an entire prophetic book, Obadiah, dedicated to its judgment for offenses against Israel. The conflict between Israel and Edom is highlighted with the infamous words, "Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated," Malachi 1, verses 2 and 3, and of course that's quoted in Romans 9. If only these two nations, Israel and Edom, had followed the original story of their progenitors, Jacob and Esau. I'm sure we're all familiar with the story of Jacob and Esau. Jacob took advantage of his brother Esau's hunger one day and tricked him into giving up his birthright. Jacob also deceived his father and stole his brother Esau's blessing. As a result, we read in Genesis 27:41 that Esau hated Jacob and said, "I will kill my brother Jacob." The two siblings moved away from each other and did not meet up again until several years had passed. And by that time, Jacob was terrified that Esau's hatred and desire for vengeance had possibly grown into a morbid hatred. And in anticipation of their meeting together, Jacob sent waves of property and gifts to Esau in an effort to appease Esau's anger and hopefully save Jacob's life. Genesis 32:20 contains the statement reflecting Jacob's plan to win over his brother. He states, "I may appease him with the gift that goes ahead of me, and afterwards I'll see his face, perhaps he will accept me." Now, the English translation of this verse misses out on a significant wordplay. The Hebrew term for face, panim, panay in the construct form, appears four times in that verse, Genesis 32:20. The term is often used in an idiomatic way to refer to somebody's presence. For example, a phrase translated ahead of me or before me can literally be translated to my face or before my face. So, an English equivalent of what the Hebrew reader or listener might see or hear when they read or listen to Genesis 32:20 with the repetition of the term face, for an English reader, it would sound like this. I will appease his face with the gift that goes before my face, and afterward, I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept my face. The wordplay causes the term face to echo in the mind of the reader or the listener. Now, before encountering Esau's face, Jacob is involved in that famous wrestling match, which is so full of mystery. The encounter took place at night, in the darkness. Jacob was alone. Jacob wrestled with a man, but ended up seeing God. The man would not give his name. The man, who turned out to be God, was not able to prevail against Jacob until he put out Jacob's hip. And to add to all this mystery, the Hebrew passage lacks references. It lacks proper names and noun identifiers. That passage is actually filled with a bunch of pronouns, which makes it very difficult to determine who is doing what to whom and who is saying what when throughout the whole account. And there's a little wordplay that enhances the enigma related to Jacob's name. The three Hebrew consonants which make up Jacob's name also make up the name of the river where they are wrestling and the verb to wrestle. So, the second and third consonants are switched in two of these terms with similar sounding vowels, and what you get is a type of alliteration or a type of assonance between these words, so that if you were to transliterate the three terms in this summary statement that Jacob wrestled at the Jabbok, at the Jabbok River, so Jacob wrestled at Jabbok, it would sound something like this in Hebrew, Yaakov, Yaabek, Be-Yabok. Now, I've never been one to preach sermons with alliteration, you know, so that all the points have the same kind of sounding words. But I guess there's precedent right here in Hebrew, because Yaakov, Yaabek, Be-Yabok. There's your three sermon points. Yaakov, Yaabek, Yabok. Well, out of this mysterious encounter, Jacob exclaims the astonishing words, "I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved," Genesis 32:30. Now we have returned to our wordplay using the Hebrew term for face, panim el panim, I have seen God face to face. It's reinforced by the fact that Jacob names the location Peniel, which translates face of God. The next day, Jacob is surprised when he encounters Esau. Instead of that morbid hatred, vengeance, and a sword, the Bible tells us, the biblical text communicates, that Esau ran to him, embraced Jacob, fell on his neck, kissed him, and they wept. Genesis 33:4. in this reunion, we encounter yet another little wordplay. Recall back in Genesis 32:20, Jacob had said to himself that he hoped to appease Esau with a gift which he sent before him. And here in Genesis 33:10, Jacob speaks to Esau and presses him to accept that gift from his hand. Now, in both of these verses, back in chapter 32 and 33, both of these verses, the Hebrew term for gift is mincha. It's the same term. We translate it gift. However, in the very next verse, Genesis 33:11, Jacob further appeals to Esau to accept this very same gift. But the Hebrew term changes from mincha, gift, to barakah. And Esau presses him in 33:11 to accept his barakah, and that is the word for blessing. The story has come full circle. Jacob now seeks to return blessing to the brother from whom he had stolen blessing years before. It appears that this conniver, this trickster, this deceiver we know as Jacob, was transformed at that mysterious nighttime encounter and came to a point of surrender and was moved to give up and return blessings rather than take them. Esau also appears to have been transformed. There are two more instances in this story of the Hebrew term for face. Jacob says of Esau in Genesis 33:10, I see your face as seeing the face of God. Now, by this point, Jacob knows what the face of God looks like because just the night before, he claims to have seen God face to face. And now he proclaims he sees God's face in Esau's face. So what does God look like? For Jacob, I would suggest the face of God looks like forgiveness, love, mercy, and acceptance, as he experienced from his brother Esau. I shared earlier about my strained relationship with my younger brother. Despite the afflictions I imposed upon him, my younger brother consistently held me in high esteem. A few years ago, he even called me one of his heroes in an overwhelmingly gracious note of tribute. My brother was known for suffocating yet loving bear hugs. I had opportunity to visit him at his home in Florida and speak at his church. I shared about how grateful I am for his forgiveness and the renewal of our relationship. And afterward, he blessed me with one of those great big bear hugs, smothering me with love. The next time I visited that church in Florida was for his funeral after his very untimely death. My brother's response of forgiveness and love and grace restored our relationship and blessed me with great joy and fellowship through the final years of his life on earth. As Jacob exclaimed regarding Esau, I too can say that in my brother's face, I have seen the face of God. Esau is one of my heroes. Over time, he took on the pain and heartache which his brother had imposed upon him, and he returned forgiveness and reconciliation. He ran to him, embraced him, hugged him, and kissed him. In doing so, Esau reflected the character of Jesus Christ. Despite our own forms of deceit and selfish ambition by which we have injured God and our brothers and sisters, Christ has not reacted against us with violence and wrath. He has taken in the pain and heartache of our sins, even to the point of dying on the cross on our behalf. Like Esau, Christ runs and embraces and hugs and kisses us with love and reconciliation. And Christ calls us to follow him and join in this work of forgiving and reconciling. We're called to absorb whatever pain and heartache others may bring and return forgiveness and reconciliation. As we pursue Christ-like character, let us consider the example of Esau, and may our faces reflect the face of God.